Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn the other cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Zach Reed, and I have a trading problem.
Hey everybody, and welcome to session 318, I think, of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will. And we will. It's a terrible twosome. A terrific twosome? That's better. We're not terrible just because we're two. And by the way, the terrible twos aren't that terrible. It's the threes that are so much worse. But I hate the phrase three-nager. That just makes me. But fantasy football, here we go. I don't know. It's going. Is it going good? It's going, right? I think fantasy football.
Fantasy. I've heard. It's been a minute since I fantasy footballed. It's for me, this time of year is really weird because I'm in a bunch of leagues with you and a whole bunch of other degenerates who draft rookies immediately after the NFL draft, or as close as you can while still spacing it out so you don't lose your sanity, Russ. Yeah. And so I'm kind of in a limbo where there are a lot of other people doing rookie drafts and mine are mostly finished. And so we had this, and I've used this phrase before, but we've had this marathon of rookie watching and then this sprint after the draft to get everything out. And now I'm kind of like, I'm wearing the tinfoil blanket and we're doing a cool down lap. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands. That's where we are now.
I have one league that does their rookie draft starts June 1st every year. Like, this is it's not a casuals. Like, there's, you know, people in it, you know, who are big fantasy football people, but it's a casual league where, like, they shut down the month of February, like after the fantasy championship, they like nothing can happen, like no trades, nothing, like the league just goes down for a month. It's just like, all right, cool your jets. You know, it comes back with the, you know, the rollover happens. They don't care. They leave it there. Rookie draft is June 1st every single year, which is, again, it's nice that, because like we do, like the Trade Addicts leagues, like I want to get those going, like let's go, man. And then it's nice to have this one, and then we have the DLF Trade Show Watchers League, where the truth is I just got really lazy when it came to replacing teams that we couldn't do the drafts yet. I had two teams I needed to fill, and I was just like, I'll get to it, like I'm doing my other drafts, I don't want to think about that right now. And then a lot of SFB stuff started and I was just like, I don't want to think about that right now. And I'm like, oh, I mean, it's almost June. I should probably take care of that. So that starts tomorrow. So I do have some rookie drafts. Of course, I don't have any firsts in the DLF league, but I do have two in the it's a 12 team super flex best ball. No tight end premium and 0.5 PPR. It's a really weird league for me because I hate running backs, but they're just so valuable. So, like, I have Saquon and Christian McCaffrey, and everyone keeps sending me offers. I'm just like, no, I can't trade. Like, I want to start a rebuild because I'm bored. But I can't because they're, like, I want to value wide receivers like I normally do, but I can't because they're just, yeah. Like, I hate having to actually adapt. I want all leagues to be the same, which I don't actually because that gets a little boring. But, yeah, so it's nice to spread it out a little bit. But let's go. We do have a bit of news. It was great. You know, Actually, it was really funny. Frank messages me this morning and he like apologizing that there's no news. I'm like, Frank, you don't literally make the news unless you want to go and do something to get someone like suspended, which I don't recommend. Like, you don't want to get hit by an NFL player or anything like that. So don't do that. But then a couple of hours pass and he's like, you know, I anytime something like this happens, I picture Annie Potts in Ghostbusters with the alarm going off. We got one. And Nico Collins got paid. And he got a 3-year extension totaling $72 million, which I think he said was like $6 million a year less than St. Brown.
Yeah.
Like that close. What do I, like, tell me, does this mean anything?
Again, it's an NFL contract. Yeah, I have to see what the contract is and what the guaranteed money is and what the outs are and that sort of thing. But also, it is smart for a team young and upcoming like Houston to be proactive and sign players who are helping their young quarterback succeed.
Yeah.
Now, rather than in another year or two when that price tag goes up. So it's always funny to me where the news cycle goes, oh, this guy's the highest paid player. Not that Nico Collins was the highest paid player, but like every quarterback is the next highest paid quarterback. Yeah. And so to me, if you have the flexibility with a young quarterback on a rookie deal and you can sign players now to help him grow, because that's what you're doing right now, is CJ Stroud is not at the pinnacle of CJ Stroud yet. Like, I know he had a great rookie year
to realize, right?
Yeah. and so putting players around him to succeed, adding Diggs, having Nico Collins sign long term, having Tank Dell, like adding Joe Mixon, adding the running backs, like they've done some really impressive things. And to me, it's so smart the way Houston, which is not something I'm used to saying, but it's so smart the way Houston is maneuvering right now with that young core, with the cap space that CJ Stroud allows you. So it's fun to me.
Yeah, and Frank says his takeaway is that it's a one and done for Diggs.
I mean, it kind of always was. I think that was the idea with Diggs, is you can get Diggs and see what you have in Diggs and benefit from Diggs' ability and then kind of go from there. I don't think it was ever we're going to sign Diggs for 4 years, because he's already 31. So, like, what are you doing there?
Look, Stefan, you're really, really, really good. We have this guy named Tank who's really, really good. That's one less really. We need you to move him up to that extra really.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm hoping. I hate indecision, because that's what I do. I hate having to make a decision. I want someone to tell me what to think, and I was really just hoping something like this would happen where it's just like, okay, well, now this is the guy that's out. Like, I can, and of course, that's not the answer. The answer isn't, well, Nico got paid, so now there's no Tank Dell. Nico got paid, so now there's no Stephon Diggs. Like, it doesn't, like, to me, it doesn't actually change anything. It's something that it was smart to do now, because if Nico crushed it this year, it'll just cost more money to do next year. And, you know, so it was a really good move to do. So, good for, like you said before, it's just good for Houston. It's good for Stroud. It's good for everyone involved, except for me, because now I still don't know what to do.
I mean, you buy Houston. Like, that offense should be really prolific again this year, maybe even more so than it was last year. I mean, you've got, for my money, Joe Mixon is a better running back than they've had, even when Singletary was doing
his thing.
Okay, and even people will say, oh, he's the shell of Joe Mixon. The shell of Joe Mixon is better than anything Houston has had the last couple of years.
But Damian Pierce.
Yeah, sure. I wish I could go back. I remember getting in multiple arguments where I was talking about selling Damian Pierce for...
I love your analogy for Damian Pierce, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like...
of just Drax with the knives and that thing's stomach. Just...
Like he's... And he's so good to and through the line of scrimmage, but then not so much afterwards. But it's... Like, this is a good team. Houston is a good team. Nico Collins is a good player. Peter Howard is going to have to, like, stop and acknowledge that Nico Collins is, in fact, a good player.
Yeah, but he'd have to watch football to do that, and he doesn't do that.
I mean, it's the old third-year breakout, which is actually a lot more rare than what we like to think. But Nico is here. He's arrived. He's been paid. They should continue to succeed.
Yeah. And again, good football is good for football. So, yay, I guess. Yeah. All right. So, what do you want to do next? Do you want to do? We have a few trades, and we got a bunch of listener questions.
Let's do trades first, because I really enjoy the listener questions, and I feel like that's going to be the meat of the show. And I want to just like head out on a bang.
All right, so you want to, you want to go appetizer and then main course.
That's it.
Roman in the chat saying, "I've got the whole Houston offense on one of my underdog basketball teams." I guess that's the way to do it. Just get them all, and you can't be wrong. Yeah. That's how it works, right? I think that's how it works. Yeah, sure. All right, so Trade Addicts Leagues are 12-team super flex PPR tight end premium with 1.75 points per tight end reception. And 0.05 points for return yardage, except for TA1, which is relevant because we have a TA1 trade, and I don't think I like it. It was me, by the way. So Trade Addicts 1, Jalen Waddle was traded for Mark Andrews and Jalen Warren. Now, again, 0.75 premium, so Jalen Waddle for Mark Andrews and Jalen Warren. What do you think, Zach?
Man, that's a close one. I think probably with the premium, it's Andrews for me, but like it's really hard to give up the Waddle side. Probably value-wise and the way you play things with the amount you trade, it's probably more people value Waddle, because I think in more leagues, and it's so hard not to pull in your outside leagues. Even if you're in a TA league where you've got the 1.75 premium and things are different, it's really hard to be strictly clinical when you're thinking about this. And I think Andrews tends to be a little undervalued, especially where he didn't have the massive season either of the last 2 years. He was good, but he had injuries and things. I personally want Andrews on my team. I probably will turn around and flip Warren because I think people like him better than I do. And if I can get, you know, a second or one of these running backs in this class or, you know, a piece that I like better, maybe. But I still want the Andrews and Warren side, even though I think probably the value is on the Waddle side.
Which is really funny, because that is a lot of the thinking I went through when I sent this offer to give Jalen Waddle to get Mark Andrews and Jalen Warren. And while I am with you, I don't necessarily care about Jalen Warren. And I want to give all of you an insight into the way my trading brain works. I agree with what Zach said. I'm like, I think Waddle's worth more. And especially when this guy, I'm pretty sure, was leaning towards a rebuilding, so he'd want the young wide receiver. So I'm like, I should get something on top. Not a lot, but I should get something. And I literally just went, his name's Jalen also. That was my process. I still have a Jalen on my team.
Jalen W.
Process.
You're good.
Holy crap. Like, that was literally what my brain did. It's just like, his name's Jalen. Let's go. You know, and knowing that he's not worth all that much, but maybe he gets a spot start and maybe I can add him to something else to get, you know, as an upgrade. I don't have my first next year, so I'm still spike contending at this point. And like Zach constantly says about my leagues, where a good tight end might as well be your super flex. And while I love Jalen Waddle, I don't think Waddle scores as lowly as he did this season again, probably for a while. Like, it really just seemed like they just kept feeding Tyreek to get that record. So I do think Waddle does do more this year, but with the premium, praying for health, and just when, you know, I loved Devontae Walker. Like, he was one of the guys, I was sad how far he fell and then sad that he ended up on the Ravens, but like, they waited until then to get a pass catcher, which means they don't plan on changing much, which means a healthy Andrews will be the pass catcher one on that team. Yeah. So, like, I'm hoping for a couple of things to go right and a little of that Waddle stuff to go wrong to make me feel good about it, but it felt fine, and I wanted to get a deal done because we didn't have a lot of deals done for today. So I did it anyway. So I sent it anyway, and he accepted it.
I tried in TA 11. I have one that's out there in the ether, but hasn't been responded to. So I tried, but
yeah. So the next is Trade Addicts 3, Trevor Lawrence, Chuba Hubbard, and hey, Mark Andrews for Justin Herbert, Romeo Doubs, and AJ Barner. So, I mean, in reality, this kind of feels like Trevor Lawrence and Mark Andrews for Justin Herbert. I don't know if we've talked about this, at least on this show. How worried are you about Justin Herbert in the Chargers Harbaugh Roman offense?
Worried, but not like insanely worried. And so I think what happens with Herbert, and the reason why he's in that second tier, and there's a pretty big second tier of quarterbacks. I mean, I think there are five or six, and he may be at the back end of that second tier because, yeah. And we're going to get to this in the listener questions, but because you have somebody like Lamar Jackson, who is like top of that second tier for me, because you have CJ Stroud, who's doing everything that Herbert has, but is younger, because you haven't really seen Herbert do with his legs quite what you maybe expected out of college. Like, so I think that this year is going to be tough because his wide receiving core is gross.
Hey, man, second year Quentin Johnston breakout. It's happening.
He would have to. But that is rough. But I do think Herbert is talented. I do think eventually they put wide receivers around him. I do think that he becomes more efficient. But I think the volume has been as high as you are ever going to see it be for Herbert, and he still hasn't cracked that upper echelon of quarterbacks. So for me, he's kind of the red herring. Like, he's a player that I think other people are higher on because it's Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
Not that I'm low on him, but I have him in the bottom of that tier where, like, I am not unhappy if I tier from Lawrence to Kyler Murray or Lawrence to Dak Prescott or Lawrence to Jordan Love and get something with them if you can. And this same thing with, like, I mean, for Herbert, not Lawrence.
Yeah, sorry. I knew what you meant.
So Herbert to those players, I think Lawrence is another tier down for me, even though you have been expecting him to be up in that second group of quarterbacks. Yeah. But this trade, Dubs is a nothing, Barner is a nothing.
Yeah.
Hubbard is a nice running back to have. Probably a nothing. But again, if you get three games out of Chuba Hubbard where he's a running back one, that's something, and you're not getting that out of Dubs or Barner. And then Mark Andrews. I am on the Lawrence Mark Andrews side because I think that the gap between Herbert and Lawrence is less than Mark Andrews.
Yeah. So before this past season, Herbert was at the top of that second tier, like not the top, but like at the top of the second tier. And Lawrence and Fields were the bottom of that second tier. Clearly Lawrence fell to third tier. Fields is still, he hasn't really stopped yet. But you're right. It still feels like, and I didn't really realize this until like one or two DLF mocks ago, because it's funny, like they don't even ask me anymore. I just get the emails that the mock is starting and the draft order is generated. I'm like, okay,
you're on the clock.
Let's go. All right. And first of all, that's A, how I realized how high on Kyler Murray I was, but also I found myself passing on Justin Herbert, like a decent amount of like when I was thinking through it, like setting up my pre-drafts and all of that. And I agree talent wise, he belongs in that second tier, but I'm concerned with what's around him. They got dime store Keenan Allen, and I mean, Josh Palmer's fine. He always did pretty well when he was replacing someone else, but that's not what you want as your wide receiver one. Like, yeah. And it was just shocking that they didn't go for a bigger splasher guy, like, than waiting that far to get McConkey. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about Herbert. Again, it's a this year thing. Like, it could very easily change next year if they go and grab a free agent, or please, please give me that beautiful number five in that powder blue. Give me T. Higgins on the Chargers. Let's go. Oh, man. favorite player in my favorite jersey. Let's go. But I agree with, in the end, I agree with everything that you said. Lawrence and Herbert, they are a tier apart, but I don't think Mark Andrews apart. And we also might just be higher on Andrews and lower on Herbert. And I just love Trevor Lawrence, even though I've grown to accept the reality. It's like Tua. I've accepted the reality that his ceiling is not a top five, six, seven quarterback, really. You know, he's a low-end one at best, and that's not bad. But, like, I wanted more for the player I really liked that much. I think Lawrence has a higher – Lawrence does have that ceiling in him, but, you know – and I also do, like, I've been falling in love with Brian Thomas Jr. at this point, so now I want them both to work out. So
the difference between Lawrence and Herbert last year in TA scoring in a per-game basis is 1.2 points.
Oh, wow. That's, I mean, that is closer than I thought. And
yeah, so, and again, like, it's not to say that Herbert is bad or Lawrence is great, but there's such a big middle class, and this is exactly why, and I don't mean to hijack the show, but this is exactly why I pivot to those top tier tight ends, because I can get the same amount of points from those tight ends, but I don't have to draft them as highly because everybody thinks, oh, I need quarterbacks. I need to have two quarterbacks. I need to be starting multiple quarterbacks, and you don't actually need to. It's a super flex, which means you can start that second quarterback, but you don't have to. And because you don't have to, there is that ability to pivot to another position where you can score a similar range and not have to draft them, up. So.
And it's a perfect transition into the next trade in Trade Addicts 4. Brandon Ayuk, Khalil Shakir, and a 26 second for Trey McBride. And this is funny because, well, it's not funny, but this is a good transition because I did this trade for Trey McBride for the exact reason of what Zach just said. I have Kyler Murray on that team. And Sam Howell, who I honestly do think will start before the end of the season, but that's not the point. But I'm acting like I only have one quarterback. And I was trying, like, we need to have a conversation about Devon Achane at some point. But I was trying to get another quarterback and having trouble. And then someone put McBride on their trade bait. And I was just like, I mean, while I really firmly believe stacks mean nothing in Dynasty, they're fun, you know, and especially when you have that premium in a volume-based guy like McBride. And it's really funny. I was in that league I was talking about without that 0.5 PPR and no premium. Some guy's trying to trade me McBride almost at a premium price. And I was just like, dude, you have to understand, in this league, McBride's not great. You know, the only time he broke into double digits was when he had over 10 receptions or a touchdown. Like, that's, yeah. But when you get 1.75 points per reception, that's a lot easier, you know? So yeah, Brandon Ayuk, Khalil Shakir, and a 26 second for Trey McBride. What do you think?
I think that one is close because Ayuk is such a dynamic player, but I will give you from week 7 on, Trey McBride kind of did some did some damage in that league where he went from week seven on 33 points, 7.5 points, 27 points, 13 points, 18 points, 28.9 points, 27.7 points, 13 and a half, and 15 and a half. So, like, you get those potential blow-up weeks, and that was once Ertz went down and McBride was kind of the confirmed guy. So I absolutely get – and Ayuk went off last year. Like, Ayuk was fantastic for especially the first half of the year. But there's also a lot of potential flux with San Francisco. I think they're not very far from being up against the cap. There have been the rumors about Ayuk being gone, Debo being gone. Like, so you don't know. And I think getting into a young tight end in that league – like, I can see it. I think it's pretty even. Again, I think maybe name recognition and traditional fantasy puts the air grammar value on the Ayuk side. But, man, I don't mind getting into the young elite tight end. And if Trey McBride does Trey McBride things again this year, he's probably a top two or three dynasty tight end.
Yeah, and that's really what my sticking point was in wanting to do this deal based around Ayuk and McBride. Ayuk, I'm a big fan of the player himself. Everything you said about his situation, I agree, it's tenuous at best. Like, you know, it's dodgy right now, but it can get scary soon. Like Frank says, Ayuk could hold out if he wants the same money as ARSB, which he has said. But also, Debo is the one that becomes very tradable soon. Again, I've read it once and I'm sticking to that fact because I like the narrative. And that's in three or four days.
The post June 1st.
Yeah. So you're like, I'm not like worried about Ayuk because whether he's in, like, I don't know, man, like real player holdouts, I'll believe it when I see it, like, you know, actually missing games and stuff like that, especially someone who's not tagged. Oh, don't scare myself with T. Higgins. Don't do that. He's not – no player would be in OTAs right now. Stop freaking out. but, like – and if Ayuk goes somewhere else, he's going to be great anyway because he's talented. He's good. So I'm not – what really caught me was if the volume is still there for McBride, which there's no reason it won't be because regardless of Marvin Harrison Jr., Kyler likes tight ends. And his age is younger than Ayuk. And – wide receiver points are more replaceable than tight end points, especially high end tight end points. So that's why, and Khalil Shakir, I don't care about. And the 26 second, I don't care about. So I was fine. He actually, I forgot what my original offer was, but he countered with McBride for Ayuk, Roman Wilson, and the 26 second. I'm like, whoa, bro, whoa, you stay away from my Roman, baby. No. And I switched it to Shakir and he said, yeah.
I like that. That's a good switch up for you, I think.
I never cared about Shakir. He was okay towards the end when, like, it was clear Gabe Davis was gone, and after Knox went down and Kincaid started doing things, and, you know, Diggs was on his decline. I was just like, but I'm not going to bite on that next Buffalo wide receiver thing, even though he's the guy that sticks out at this point because Keon Coleman is a tight end, you know, so... But still, I'm not going to buy into that. I'll if he has that name recognition or that positional recognition, I'm going to take advantage of it and see what I can do. So even if he does turn into a solid wide receiver too, which would be his cap anyway, I still feel good using him to get McBride. So next we move to TA6, which is a little, all right. It was James Cook for Chris Godwin. Okay.
Yeah, I get it. It's probably like just slightly the Cook side. Godwin's 28, but like Godwin's 28. It's not like that's not the end of a wide receiver. It's especially the value is probably slightly Cook's.
Yeah, like I don't super have interest in James Cook in general. Like he, you know, you were the one that always said, you know, the running back one in Buffalo wears number 17. Yeah. And you know, they brought in guys that aren't bad, you know, in the run, and they've always tried to have multiple running backs, even though they just haven't had the right guys there. They always bring in more running backs.
The one, though, really interesting thing, and this is why I think I side just slightly to the Cook side with Buffalo this year, is that offense is going to look different. I know that people are excited about what they did in the draft. I know people are excited about, you know, whatever, Khalil Shakir or Curtis Samuel, but James Cook is actually a very adequate pass catcher and potentially, you know, he's versatile enough to be in the backfield, to run in motion, to be in the slot, to do some things in that offense, and could end up contributing more than people assume. And he was a top 12 running back last year overall, in the aggregate. And part of that's just being healthy, but also part of that is he was pretty efficient and pretty good when he had the ball.
Yeah, he definitely had some spike weeks. You know, I won't take that away from him. But, I mean, also, I'm just a Chris Godwin fan. And I really like him. That's another guy I've accepted long ago that he's not going to be a wide receiver one or anything. But solid low-end two, high-end three, with the ability to catch two touchdowns in any game. So, like, you're right. This probably does, value-wise, if anything else, lean the Cook side. But whatever. Cool. Glad there was a trade done. That's it. Okay, so our last trade comes from TA10. And this was, I talked with you through this one. Breece Hall and Chris Olave for Amon-Ra St. Brown, Travis Kelce, Tank Bigsby, Christian Watson, and a 26 second. One more time, because that got long. Breece Hall, okay, well, you know what? I'll take away the whatever. Breece Hall and Chris Olave for Amon-Ra St. Brown and Travis Kelce is really what it comes down to. But then Tank Bigsby, Christian Watson, and the 26 second were also in there. This was me again, like I said before, and I have no idea what to do. Like, my Trade Addicts 10 team was the team that I thought I was competing with last year, and it fell apart. And so I had no idea what to do with it, and I put Amon-Ra St. Brown alone on my trade bait because I was like, let me try and break this guy down into something. And I couldn't find a deal that made me happy. I'm like, I don't know how to trade down from Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't know how to do it. And really, what's really, really, really funny about this was, again, a view into my brain of how I trade. Don't do what I do. I was going back and forth with Pwin on this one a lot. And this came into my inbox. He sent it to me. And I literally just went, you've earned it. And I hit accept. Like, this was close enough and it was fine. And I really like Breece Hall and Chris Olave. I will probably try and flip, but I like him enough. If not, okay, this is good enough. That's fine. You've gone back and forth enough with me for like 3 days with 18 offers. You've earned it. You get this. And that is literally why I accepted this, because I just wanted to hit accept for something finally.
And in the other part of this, I think, that is a little undervalued or underappreciated in your mind, at least the way you talk through this, is you're also in a Travis Kelce off ramp where, like, you actually got like something back, not just for St. Brown, but also Kelce.
Yeah.
So like that Olave, Hall, Kelce, St. Brown, like that's a nice off-ramp for Kelce especially if you don't think you're like ultra competitive right now. I still think Olave is overvalued by the community for what he has produced so far. And I know there are some smart numbers people who are telling me that I'm wrong about that, but I'm sticking to like what I see and what he has been. That would be the flip for me. But I do not mind this. It's hard for me to give up on Amon-Ra St. Brown, though.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, I haven't run the numbers. I haven't gone to like Donkey Planet or whatever the site is to dump my roster. But he's one of my most rostered players at this point, St. Brown. That's such an easy way to start, you know, moving your team, is to break down a stud and get more pieces and get it rolling. And I really thought I'd have an easier time flipping Olave over to John Bosch, but I sent him an offer today and he rejected it. And I don't remember what it was or if it was good or not, but he said no. I tried to make him overpay because he loves Olave, but also John Bosch is smarter than that and wouldn't overpay. This was one of those where I think I feel fine with it. When someone is trying to get Travis Kelce from me, they darn well know he's my tight end one. Like, they know they need to give me value for him. And P-Win knew that. It took him time to come to grips with it. And he even in the end said, he's like, I don't know if I feel good about the fact that you accepted this. And I'm like, me neither. So I guess that means we both win.
Yep, that's how that works.
Yep. It's a good, if you both hate it, it's a good trade. it was fun. It was a good team moving thing. And I definitely at least plan to move Olave. If not, if it seems like I'm really not going to compete, you know, once the season starts, I'll try and move Brees to see what I can get, because man, I've seen him be the first running back taken. You know, I still have Bijan as my RB1 because of what has happened, but Brees is two, and it's not that far away.
Yeah.
And also, just to talk on Olave real quick, if anything changed in New Orleans for the better, I would love Olave. But like, even like, it doesn't even need to necessarily be like, better is a very in quotes word. Like, Jameis Winston is not better than Derek Carr, but he's a better quarterback for Chris Olave. Or for fantasy production in general. Like, so if they moved on from Carr and did something, I would feel better about Olave. But nothing happened.
Like, yeah.
Nothing changed. So I don't, like, that's what has me worried, that we, the collective, we didn't drop him in our rankings after the season.
No, I mean, but we're still doing the dream on Olave because people liked him 2 years ago coming out, and that's what we do, is, or 3 years ago come out, we hang on to that. We want to be right. And we're right, but not to the extent that people expected Olave to be right.
Yeah. But it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Maybe I have to try and make a trade before I send this one away. Before I post this one. All right. So let's move on to listener questions, because we do have a decent amount. At Ninja Turtle _JFA. First of all, just love that you have Ninja Turtle in your handle. By the way, Donatello, who's yours?
I was always a Leo guy.
Yeah, I felt like you were a Leo guy. See, the thing is, when you grow up with glasses, you usually just go towards the geek of the group, yeah. No matter if they wear glasses or not. And that's what happened with me and Donatello. It's just like, all right, he's a nerd. Let's go. He's mine.
I love the intelligent, like, that's, I do love that, but it was always the katanas.
The katana. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. It's wrong, but I get it. All right. So Ninja Turtle _JFA says, do you think a leaner fit Lamar Jackson is looking to smash the QB running record this year? If so, how high does this move him in your ranks? We both kind of talked about this already.
I don't know that he can move higher in my, like, I got him at like QB4. Like, he's
out there for me as well. Yeah, he's four, actually. You know, I still have a tier of three up top.
Yep.
Josh Allen is my one. Yeah, but then it's Mahomes or Hurts, however you feel. Lamar is next, and then it gets a little iffy. Like, I feel like I have to have CJ Stroud next. And then after that, like, I have, it's where I start having trouble putting anyone above Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
but yeah, Lamar is absolutely top of the next tier. So I don't know. Again, he can move into the top tier, I guess. But I don't know if that, I won't do it based on more rushing, I think, because that's not super sustainable, as in the offense itself getting better.
Right.
Yeah. Like, if the offense gets better and he happens to run more, but if it's like a lot more designed running and stuff like that, that I don't like that as much. But again, we're both on the Lamar train already. So,
I mean, and I agree with you where, like, I don't think that his rushing now is what needs to be expanded on.
Yeah,
like, he already has that, and the news about him coming in slimmer doesn't really affect it. What like affects my thinking about Lamar Jackson is he's a great rusher. And last year he threw for more yards than he's ever thrown in a season. He threw for 24 touchdowns. There's still room to grow on the passing side of things. And he is the best runner at the quarterback position in the NFL. So he's still going to be QB4.
Yeah. Again, it's going to be very, very tough for me to move him into that upper first tier, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Jason Real in the chat saying they got Rattler, Spencer Rattler, talking about the Saints. I mean, honestly, I always have a little spot in my heart for guys that are Devy darlings that don't pan out because that sucks that they were so high ranked and regarded and then they just sort of fade. And Rattler was one of those people. So I'm here for it. Let's go. Plus, again, if that makes the Saints better, I'm here for it. Next, at FF Tommy B. Hope you're ready to think, Zach, because I'm not. If you could teach the Dynasty community one thing and it would stick, what would it be?
So I don't – this is going to be a little outside the box, Tommy, and I'm not sure if it's exactly what you're looking for. And this is – thinly veiled life advice, but also dynasty advice. It's not a zero-sum game. And I think what I mean by that is it's not all or nothing. You don't win or lose a trade. It's not if you're putting out content and somebody is consuming your content, that doesn't mean that people aren't consuming someone else's content. So we can do so many things within the dynasty community and as small, as micro as you want or as macro, we can pull this way back. It's not a zero sum game. It's not all or nothing. It's not binary. It's not a zero or a one. So in a trade, they're not win or lose. You don't have to win the trade. Your opponent doesn't have to lose the trade. There are shades in that where you can make trades that benefit both teams. You can make trades that bolster your weakness and also bolster the weakness of your trade partner while simultaneously improving both teams. When you're talking content, I can say, and I have multiple times, and I will continue, that Tommy is one of the most underfollowed minds in dynasty fantasy football. I think he has some really brilliant concepts, and that doesn't diminish my content. That doesn't hurt me at all. It doesn't drive people away from my content. You can lift other people up, and it goes in so many facets of this game. You aren't necessarily either a rebuild or a contender because things flip so fast. I think we think in, and our mind wants to think in, these absolute either or statements, and it's often, almost always, not that.
Yeah, a very relevant statement for both of our families. It's a spectrum.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with what you say, and it's really funny that, to move it over to spectrum and stuff like that. It's part of autism is expectations. And when things don't go as expected, it's really tough to, to move on from what you thought, and emotional regulation goes out the window and tantrums happen and stuff like that. You'll go into a season and you're all right, I'm rebuilding. And then you start scoring points. And then instead of doing what is probably best for your team and kind of leaning into that and going to win, people will just start selling those points away because they're rebuilding. It's no, you just because you came in with this expectation doesn't mean you need to stick to that. Take a second, breathe, look at the greater story of what's happening. These are all things I've talked to my son about, over and over again. And it was something I absolutely struggled with growing up. Like, oh man, did I have a temper on me as a kid, especially when playing games and, you know, roll of the dice was supposed to fall to six, but like a wind blew it over to a four and I lost. Like those, like, I probably was a board flipper, but like, you know, getting out when I thought I was going to get, like, you know, playing kickball and I kick it into the outfield. I'm like, yo, I'm making this to first. And they tag me out and I start flipping over, and, you know, because like, in my head, I was going to be safe. You know, you have to be able to take a step back and look at the bigger picture of everything and realize that because you came into something with a certain mindset doesn't mean you need to leave that with the same mindset. It's honestly works out better in the long run to be able to adapt and to, you know, to be water or, you know, leaf in the wind and all of that stuff. And maybe a lot of the times you find out you were right the whole time, but still it's for your betterment if you have the ability to have an open mind about it. And again, speaking from a complete experience, tunnel vision sucks, you know? And so, you know, to just echo what Zach said, in fantasy and in real life, be willing to adapt, be willing to, and, you know, I wrote my past two DLF articles, my trading posts had a lot to do about player bias, because that's where I'm stuck in a lot of situations where I was talking about Kyler Murray and, you know, bias about being able to admit when you're wrong, and how I'm very good at admitting when I was wrong about disliking someone. But when I like a player, I will make excuses to the end of the earth for the next 13 years for them. Like, you know, Corey Davis said he might not be retiring. So here we go. Your breakout. Let's go. But I think my thing is, again, not very specific, but it's just have fun. Like, a lot of times you see people take things so, and again, it ties back to content creation a lot. Like, it's so funny when I see people talking, like, leaving Twitter and stuff like that because it's toxic and stuff like that. And I was just like, I've literally never gotten into a Twitter argument. That's a lie, once. And I had the guy apologizing to me by the end because I was nice about it. It was like, you see people, and especially when it comes to, like, when, like, you know, they make a strong take to try and get noticed for, you know, for follows and stuff like that, and then start screaming at each other, or like, it never made sense to me when people got angry over trade offers.
Yeah,
like, it's a game. Like, I get it, we put money in, but usually it's not a lot. But even if you are playing in high stakes league, there's worse things to get upset about than getting a bad trade offer. I would not be able to have people in my leagues if they got upset at my offers, because like, it's a running joke, the offers I send Rocky, and it's not a joke because it's wrong. It's not a joke because I send him good offers. It's a joke because it's funny how bad some of my offers end up being. And a lot of the times it's because I wasn't paying attention when I was sending them. Like, oh, what was I thinking when I sent? I'm sorry. Like, the amount of times I've said that. You know, like, it's, and this also feeds into, you know, the question I asked at the end of my tweet was, what's something about fantasy football that you get irrationally annoyed with? And to me, it's when people get annoyed over fantasy football, because, like, I mean, there's a certain amount of annoyance that comes with losing and stuff like that. Like, that's part of the fun, is to, you know, have a little bit of seriousness to it. But like, people get like angry. Like, we had a dispersal in one of my leagues. I don't want to be specific because I don't want anyone to try and extrapolate who this person was. We had a dispersal with a lot of teams. And what I did was, in my fantasyleague.com, you can drop rosters at one time, so there's no emails that come out. So I dropped and I loaded the rosters, but draft picks, you need to trade them. So I was going through and trading the picks to the other teams. And some guy just goes, what is going on? These trades are atrocious. This is ruining the league. I quit. And he left. He left the chat. He disconnected his team. And I was like, I was just fixing the dispersal. That wasn't real. What? We have an open team. Like, like he took that so seriously, like, and didn't like this problem. This led me to believe he was leaving anyway. But like, yeah, why not just be like, hey, what? Like, which a couple of people did, because if I was a smart person, I would have said, hey, I'm about to do this. and I didn't, but still, like, everyone's like, why did someone just trade a first for 2/4? And I was just like, oh, my bad. I'm finishing the dispersal fix, you know, yeah, like moving the picks around. But like, people get so angry. I'm just like, it's a game.
And I'm not usually a comedy fan. That's not my genre. But it's the Van Wilder, don't take life too seriously, you'll never get out alive.
Which is so funny, because I know a real person said that, but the first time I heard it, it was Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, I constantly quote Van Wilder. I love that movie so much. I started sending, you know, I talked to Scott Fish a lot because we're Fantasy Cares, and we keep saying, like, we need to write stuff down. So, and in Van Wilder, he can't remember that. So, like, write that down. So I started using that GIF. Write that down. Yeah. All right. So Tommy says his pet peeve. There is one manager in my league that will send a trade offer. Hey, would you take my player X for your player Y without actually including the assets in the offer? Just have the courage. Oh, that's the kind of person that, like, sends like $1 for that player and says, what do you think, like, what would it take to get this player? Or like, would you do this trade in the comments? Just in the offer. Like I get that message a lot. Like, oh, you updated your trade bait. What do you want for this guy? An offer.
Something. Yeah.
Like, look, if you want to say, Russ, I'm interested in this guy you put on the trade bait, send me an offer. I'll send you an offer. But if you want to send me an offer, send me an offer. Like, so again, annoyance isn't the right word for me, because it's just like, all right, whatever. Okay, cool. But like, I get it. Like, that is.
But to me, Tommy, and I don't, again, this is not me trying to hijack, but that is a cry for help. That is somebody who is not confident enough in either their trade valuations or the way they approach trades. And they're trying to open up a trade. So maybe dialogue with them. Maybe give them okay, I would like something like this. Can you put something together? You know, and have a conversation instead of, like, to me, so I don't have the ability to do the, like, get worked up over this stuff. Like, I will just flat reject trades, which is also fine. But like, If you have somebody in your league who is constantly doing that, that is definitely, I mean, that's 4 or 5 or 6 years ago, before I started doing a lot of listening to, again, Trade Addicts and Shane Manila and people who are really good at trades, and so much credit to you, Russ. I was not a good trader. I either didn't trade, I would just sit back and, like, I was very passive, or I would do a similar thing where I would ask, hey, what do you think of this, trying to glean information, but that doesn't actually start a trade necessarily. And so sometimes you just have to kind of show them how to get there, and then you end up fostering a trade partner. You kind of cultivate this. You're growing your own trade partner, Tommy. You need to plant that seed, maybe water it a little bit, and then eventually you may end up with something lucrative.
Yeah, tell them you have a great podcast they could listen to. Just wait till next episode so they don't hear us talking about them. What the real answer to what I end up doing in this situation when I do want to be helpful, I will go to their team and say, like, I'm interested in this. And, yeah, like, list all the players and picks I'm interested in. I'm like, put something together with that. Like, I joke about how silly my trade stuff is and all of that stuff. But there's some strategy to it. And the reality is, who offers the first offer is a little bit of a power play. It does come into the art of negotiation. Like, there is a little bit of actual intelligence to it. You know, not always, because like I said, I literally accepted a trade because he earned it. Like, you know, sometimes there's some silliness to it, but I wouldn't have taken it if I didn't think it was at least close. You know, like, I wasn't doing it for the sake of doing it, which I've honestly also done also, but that's, again, we're ignoring that stuff right now. But yeah, like, you know, like, you want to be annoyed by this person, but like, Zach's right. The chances are they just might not be good at it, in which case you help them get better, or just bitch about it behind their backs. Either, like, whatever makes you feel better in the, or do both, you know, whatever makes you feel good, because that is, that's not the right way to do it. Like, there's no wrong ways to do it, but that's not the right way to do it. Next, at Roto Heat Craig, if Zach could go back in time and undo one assassination, which would it be? Just to put this out there, Zach's Twitter handle is at TacitAssassin13. That is why this question is being asked. There's no weirder backstory to this question.
This is a really heavy question, a really good question. I think the kind of popular answers would be presidents, where you'd be like JFK or Lincoln. That's not where I would go. I've got two.
Two came to my mind very quickly.
What you got? Yeah, so I've got two, and it's kind of cheating. But by the time you listen to this, like, I've already done it. And if you want to kind of send your protest to the league, they'll turn it down, because they never change things after they happen anyway. But like, for me, Martin Luther King is the, like, that is the one. You're talking about a man who was killed at 39 years old after he won a Nobel Prize, and the work in the civil rights movement. So he started doing work, civil rights, in 1950. I love history, but 1955, you know, with the Birmingham, like the buses, and then all the way to 1968, when he died. He got the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964. He got the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965. He got the Fair Housing Act passed, and did this all with nonviolent protest and talking. And I think, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but if you look at the fantasy football space, sometimes you need a catalyst, like Scott Fish doing the Scott Fish Bowl, doing Fantasy Cares, and then all of a sudden the entire fantasy community shifted to do good. And I think that's what Martin Luther King was for the country, where, yeah, there was friction, but like, there was such a move to, and you even had, you know, JFK and Robert Kennedy kind of moved to that side of the aisle, and the fact that the protests were nonviolent, and you had to have the conversation, like, and that, I think, is we miss that an awful lot, is the conversations aren't necessarily being had now. It's shouting, and it's animosity, and it's violence, and so that, like, that would, that Martin Luther King, if you could undo one. And the other one is Archduke Franz Ferdinand, which, yeah, I mean, that, like, that set off the dominoes for World War One, which set off the dominoes for World War Two, which, like, that changed the entire face of humanity. So those two would be the, I guess Martin Luther King would be kind of the United States version of things, and would make everything so much better than where we are at this point. And then globally, the Franz Ferdinand, Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria.
I really thought I would get to say the phrase Archduke Franz Ferdinand first. I did not expect you to have that answer also. Frank of the Chess is John Lennon. That's a good one. So my two answers, because I'm me, first, I said Archduke Franz Ferdinand because of World War One and everything that led on, but also, then we wouldn't have had the band Franz Ferdinand. And while Take Me Out is a fun song, that song has been in my head for 30 something years, and I want it out. It's not even that old, and it's been in my head for that long. I said the wrong number. Leave me alone.
I'm gonna do that one this week for you, Russ. I am. I'm gonna do that tomorrow night. I'll record it and do a show on Thursday.
And then, of course, since I'm me, the second thing that came to my head really, really quickly was Bambi's Mother.
Man, you cut me deep with that one.
Right. That should, And plus, I needed to make it not too serious. All right, so let's move back to fantasy football at Messy Messick. Hey, fellas, what late-round rookie are you highest on? Someone you're trying to come out of every draft with. I'm going to take this first because mine are a little bit cheating because the answer isn't that all that late, and we joked about him before. Roman Wilson, he's the mid, sometimes falling to the late second, which, again, isn't very late, but he's really the rookie I've been leaving with most. After that, it's the two tight ends of Jatavion Sanders and Theo Johnson. They're even in tight end premium leagues getting drafted in the fourth, if at all, which is crazy to me because they were drafted in, what, the third and fourth round in the NFL, and there's no one in front of them on their teams. Darren Waller, if he does actually not retire, is clearly a shell of what he could be. So, like, I think, you know, Theo Johnson is going to be the starting tight end there. I mean, not to completely write off Danny Belly, but, like, I think Theo Johnson will be a thing, and I think Jatavion Sanders will be a thing because, again, there's no one else there. Like, Hayden Hurst wasn't all that great, and he's gone now. Like those are the three, and one of them is completely cheating because he's not even a late round pick. But I know you have real answers to this, so I wanted to give you more time.
Well, no, I mean those are real answers, but mine are going to be Rasheen Ali,
yep,
who is going fourth, probably or maybe fifth, maybe undrafted in your rookie draft. Although he may be pushed up a little bit because a couple weeks ago JJ Zacharyson mentioned him, and so that is a thing. But like, Rasheen Ali in Baltimore in an offense that wants to run behind Derrick Henry, obviously, but is super dynamic. And if he gets a chance, I think he's really good. Eric All.
Yeah.
The tight end that ended up getting drafted by Cincinnati in the fourth. Super athletic, a little underappreciated because of his injury history in college. So his production doesn't look great, but I know he only played there 1 year, is an Iowa tight end. Not that that really matters, but like, I really like Eric.
Oh, that absolutely counts. And you know me.
He's going back in a draft. And then maybe this is a homer pick, and maybe this is I was frustrated with their draft, but Javon Baker.
Yeah.
Who I think Polk and Baker should have been flipped in the Patriots draft board. I think Baker should have gone in the second. Polk should have gone in the fourth. Whatever, but I really like a lot of what Javon Baker does, and so those are the guys that I end up in the back end of the fourth round looking at again and again and again. And I'm going to talk about him in just a minute, but like, Ray Davis is falling a bunch too.
I was curious why you didn't say him first, because I know he's
well, because there's another answer that I want to put Ray Davis in, but
okay, I don't have a lot of end of draft picks, and it's, again, usually Trade Addicts leagues or leagues I run end up with that 0.75 premium, which is crazy to me that those two guys keep falling. And then he says, just something annoying in general for me, trade that
pandering to brand, the host.
look, I get it. If you play what you want, if you want trade deadlines, cool. They're not for me. I hate them. Like, I literally remember the first time I'm in a league with a trade deadline and Melvin Gordon was the stud running back of the Chargers and he got hurt right at the beginning of the fantasy playoffs. And I had this weird guy named Austin Eckler and couldn't trade him because the trade deadline passed. I couldn't get anything for him. And of course, it was like another year and change before Austin Eckler became a thing, and that league folded the next year anyway. So it didn't really matter. But like, I just remember that feeling of like, I should be able to do something about this, and I couldn't. And that's why I knew from then on, I don't want trade deadlines anywhere ever.
That's fair. Yeah, I got asked a trade deadline question the other day. I was on Dynasty Underdog, and I said, I don't care, like. I care, but I don't care. Like, I have leagues that have them because Kyle. I have leagues that don't because of you. I approach them differently because they're different. And I don't think that the advantage is as great one way or the other as people think. And I think sometimes you can actually get more done as a rebuilder in a league that does not have a trade deadline.
Absolutely, you can.
Yeah.
I like, again, we could do an entire show on trade deadlines. But we're going to move on. At DFF underscore S, Jonathan 02. Working backwards, the explanation why I should make a trade, usually a terrible offer.
Well, that's why he doesn't like that. That's the annoying thing.
Yeah.
I get that.
Like, the comment section exists. It's there for a reason. You can absolutely use it. Don't tell people why they should make that trade. Like, you know, first of all, never assume that they see their team the same way you do. Like, don't go in, you're weak at running back, so here's a running back. They might just be fine with how they are. But also, it's condescending. You don't want to do that. And then he says, is J.J. McCarthy truly a thing, or is he more Sam Howell, asking for my ownership of J.J.?
Those are two separate things. I think it's
more of a not Sam Howell-esque player, but more like he's going to start and then go away.
That's a good question. So, like, the Sam Howell, like, the player, if you Zachary Kruger, who's really like a good follow, is ZK underscore FFB on Twitter, does pressure to sack rate, which is a really fun stat, especially because it translates pretty well to being successful in the NFL. Howell's pressure to sack rate was 26.7% in his last year in 2022 at UNC. McCarthy's was 17.1%. You kind of want to be under that 20%. And so they're different, but I like the issue with J.J. McCarthy. I think McCarthy's fine. I think he's good. I don't think he is as good and doesn't have the ceiling that people think he does, because he went as a first-round pick, because he won a national championship. To me, it's looking at him, I think he's somewhere between Mac Jones, which is not a great floor, and Kirk Cousins, which isn't a great ceiling. Like, it's a good ceiling.
Yeah, it's fine.
But like, if that's your, but that's like, if everything goes perfectly, he's Kirk Cousins. So like, to me, he's fine. Like, I'm not going to tell you that like you screwed up because you have a high rostership of J.J. McCarthy, but I think he was clearly the fourth quarterback in this class. Like, clearly, without I don't think that he and Penix are as far apart as people are talking either.
Yeah, and I think my big issue with what we're doing with J.J. McCarthy's value is that, you know, we try and say, like, we've built ourselves, you know, the A.J. Brown conundrum. Like, we dropped the collective we again. Dropped A.J. Brown's value so much because of the terrible landing spot with the Titans. We got proven wrong really quickly. So we always want to say, don't let situation change your player, how you value a player. But when someone lands in a good situation, we let it happen far too much. Like, this is absolutely, you know, every wide receiver drafted by the Chiefs ever. You know, the second, you know, the wide receiver two in Green Bay. If J.J. McCarthy, even if he went in that same draft area, and as I look now, Frank said the exact same thing I'm about to say, if he went to any other team, he wouldn't be like thought of nearly as valuable as he is right now. It's just the fact that he went to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Hawkinson, and, oh man, who's in the backfield nowadays? Aaron Jones? Like, yeah, and, you know, assuming he's a good pass catcher also, like, he went to that team, and that's what bolstered his value. It's not that he was good that bolstered his value. If you happen to like J.J. McCarthy, then this is great for you because you like a player and he went to a great spot. On J.J. McCarthy. So, like, okay, cool. He went to a good spot. I don't think I have any shares of him because he always went higher than I wanted him. Yeah, like, I think he can be a thing because of the safety of his situation. But again, it depends on your definition of thing. Like, I agree, he probably has a Kirk Cousins-esque ceiling, which, again, isn't bad. It's just not you know, great.
And I think, but I think the thing that he does that Cousins doesn't do at this point and that he will have to clean up is you see those like hero throws where he'll like roll out and then try to throw back across the grain, you know, all the way across the field because, oh, I can do this rather than, you know, take the 3 yards and run out of bounds. Like he does some things that you're just like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Brett Favre kind of ruins quarterbacking a little bit with a crap he was able to do and people watching and being like, I'm going to try and do that. And like, even Favre didn't always pull it off, but like, he just always tried it. Like he really, like, I think ruins the, a lot of technicality of quarterbacking.
Yeah.
It was so much fun to watch.
Well, and even Mahomes will do some of that, but he's so smart and so talented that and Favre, I think, was, I don't know that I would call Brett Favre smart, but I do think that he processed the game really well.
Oh, yeah. Like, you have to be a little smart to pull off the stuff he did, but, like, a lot of it was on talent. And
But I don't think, like, to me, when I think of a smart quarterback, like a cerebral quarterback, I think of Manning, who can sit there and walk up to the line of scrimmage and completely dissect what the defense is doing, what they're trying to do, and then be able to counter it. Favre, I think you hear the quote where like someone was like, you know, man, how did you recognize that they were dropped back into a cover two? And he's like, what? And he's just like, you know, he just sees the fact that his receiver is going to come open deep and he's going to fire it up there. And I don't think McCarthy process, and Frank, it's exactly what I'm saying is Frank says in the chat that I feel like he doesn't process the field as well as people would want. I don't think he was asked to process the field. And then in the instances where he needed to, I don't think that he did very well. And so that's going to kind of be a learn on the fly thing where, but Minnesota is a good place to be because Justin Jefferson's there. Jordan Addison's there. Obviously we mentioned Aaron Jones. You've got Hawkinson there when he comes back off his injury. If there is a friendlier situation for a quarterback, I don't know it, but it's a matter of the Vikings making that offense friendly for McCarthy because he's going to need it.
You got me thinking about what would just be a really fun situation for a quarterback. And then I started to think, I want Will Levis on the same team as Tyreek Hill to see if Will Levis can overthrow Tyreek Hill. That just sounds like fun. All right. And Jonathan finishes this. Why do folks rush rookie drafts just to sit on the clock the entire time? Now, I have to take both sides of this because back in the day when this show had a merch shop, one of the first things we put in there and one of my favorite things was hashtag Team Slow Draft, which I love the fact that J. Mike still rocks that picture. I don't know if he could still, if that shirt still is in existence at this point, but he has a picture of him wearing it. Yeah, the clocks exist for a reason. Like, it's the same thing when you're watching the NFL draft. Why did the Bears need to sit on the clock for 5 minutes? Like, you know who you're taking. Just get it over with. Like, give Caleb his moment of calling him and all of that stuff, and then make the pick. It should take 3 minutes at most. Just get it over with and let's move on. But the clock exists, so you don't really get to be upset when people take their clock. Now, also taking into a fact, not the NFL, but rookie drafts, people have lives. People have jobs where they can't always look at their phones. Like, but also, you have back-to-back picks. Why did you pick one and then sit on the next one? Like, what the hell, man? there's both sides of this. Like, come on, I want to get this going. Why are you taking so long? But the real answer is there's a clock. It exists for a reason. Then whatever.
It always makes me laugh that people, like, you look forward so much to the rookie drafts
and you want it
over. And then you get people like rushing through them, and I'm like, this is the fun part. Once we get done this,
we have nothing.
Here we are after the marathon wearing our, you know, our shiny aluminum foil blankets.
So. Yeah. And just talking about what just happened.
Yeah.
And that's it. And nothing to look forward to. At Real Fantasy TL, who is a player that you want to get more shares of that people aren't really talking about?
This is the Ray Davis one. That answer is Ray Davis.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't know if people are talking about him, but the answer for me is just Roman Wilson again, because he's, again, I took this as rookies for some reason, even though it wasn't necessarily, he didn't say rookies, he just said player. But also, like, in the day and age we live, there's no one that no one's talking about anymore. Yeah. Like, I think it was Jonathan who said at one point before, like, there's no such thing as sleepers anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he put those words in one of his questions 2 weeks ago. Like, it's true. They're
For me, with Ray Davis, we just talked about James Cook finished as a running back 12 last year in Buffalo. Davis, at the very least, could be what Cook was. If there's an injury, he was a top three running back for me pre-draft. And he's going off in DLF's latest ADP, like overall ADP, not rookie ADP, as the running back 46.
Yeah, that's pretty late.
I want that.
Yeah, like, that's such an easy dart throw to take, especially, again, at that price. Yeah, I don't have any, like, vet players that, like, I'm going to sound smart for saying, and then they're going to... I saw a positive piece about Tim Patrick, which made me really happy, just in general about
Was the player. Was it Peter?
because, like, that dude just deserves greatness, because his name is Tim Patrick, and he's just, no one ever wants to give him a chance, and all he ever does is do really well when he's on the field. But yeah, I wish I had a good answer for this that would make me feel smart, but I really don't. Like, I don't have any of those lower players I'm trying to, like, get on my board, on my teams right now, except for, like, all the rookies we've talked about already at this point. Yeah. At @Sega_FF, why do I only
know
have
him?
One? You know him. I know him. He's been on this show, and I talked to him. Why do I, and I haven't, I want to meet him in person. I should just go to the Boston draft. Why do I only have one notebook entry on Zach? In quotes, not all heroes wear capes. First of all, I need to say that I call Leo Zach's dynasty dad. And weirdly enough, I didn't realize it was also kind of a looks thing as well. Now you just need some tattoos, Zach, and you'll be on.
His son says that I'm his long lost younger brother.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound as good as Dynasty Dad.
I'm flattered. I feel like there's probably more in the notebook, but like, I feel a little bit like Manfred Mann and his Earth Band. Doing Blinded by the Light, which is a cover of Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm just Manfred Mann doing the one song and covering Bruce Springsteen, who is the boss. That's really, I think, where the relationship is. I always use the Josh Ritter line, you know, all the other girls here are stars. You're the Northern Lights. They try to shine in through your curtain, but you're too close and too bright. They try and they try, but everything that they do is a ghost of a trace of a pale imitation of you. And that is what I am with, you know, with Leo. Like, I'm doing the Leo thing, but he's doing it so much brighter and so much better and for so much longer.
And I was about to say something that made it like, I was about to say, you're carrying on his legacy, but Leo's still here. It's like that
is crushing it. Absolutely crushing it.
I wish, of course he doesn't show his notebooks to anyone, but I wish I was ever in a league with Leo, because like, I think my notebook entry would be one of two things, a picture of a stick figure shrugging or like the Tasmanian devil, just like spinning because
pressing buttons.
Yeah.
All of the buttons.
Like, because I don't know, I mean, in the long term, there's a lot of, like, Zach knows all of my tells, and I'm not secret about any of them. If you have a Clemson wide receiver or Calvin Ridley, send them to me. I'll overpay for them. Like, it's not a secret, but like, in reality, I don't know what I'm doing. I just like pressing buttons. Okay, we have two more. At Ascending Descent, who do you think will start? I see AOC, and I don't think Aiden O'Connell at first. Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew? Okay, the rest of that is a separate question. So who do you think is going to start, O'Connell or Minshew?
I think to begin, it's Minshew. Because I think,
want it to be Minshew.
Yeah, I do too, fantasy-wise. I think he gives them the best chance to win. If they're starting Aiden O'Connell, they're trying to draft the quarterback next year. which means things have gone horribly wrong and they've lost with Minshew.
Yeah, like you want, if you're a Brock Bowers person, you want Minshew starting. And like, because Minshew has shown over and over again that while he might not be true NFL starting caliber, he is fine for fantasy production. Like his pass catchers will produce. And yeah, of course, the mustache. So like I think it will be Minshew, and I hope it's Minshew. So like those kind of intersect. Any concern about any wide receivers holding out? I know it's early. That's the third question. All right. So any worries about wide receivers holding out? I don't think so.
I mean, I'm not worried about it until it happens.
Yeah. Like I said, I'll believe it when I see it. I'm going to be freaking out about Higgins, but that's more of a, I mean, that's more of a personal thing, like a real life thing, but also I just have a whole lot of shares of him.
There are always a lot of threats.
Yeah, very rarely does it come to fruition.
Very rarely, because if you hold out long enough to be effective, you actually lose your year of service and then your contract doesn't roll over and you end up right back where you were, but you didn't get paid for a year. Like, there's just the way the NFL is set up, like that holdout doesn't really, it's not very effective. Like you can hold out, I can't remember if it's 6 or 8 games.
8 games. Oh, at least it used to be 8 games. Yeah, I don't know if anything changed with adding the extra game to the season. But it used to be you have to come back by week 9.
But like, we don't ever see that. I think the last time that actually was Le'Veon Bell, but he ended up sitting out longer than that. Like,
and it did not work out well for him.
No, and that was a franchise tag thing too. So that was, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. It's, I'm not worried until it happens. I don't think you can play the game being afraid of that sort of thing, because that's machinations of the league that we don't have any control over.
How are you approaching the Cowboys running back room? Turn around and run away.
I would say very similarly to driving past a dead skunk on the side of the road. You get over as far as you can away from it. You drive very quickly past it. I mean, this was an offense where Tony Pollard, who everyone thought was going to be great, barely finished as a running back too. Yeah. Now you've got Rico Dowdle and the ghost of Ezekiel Elliott. Yeah. It's a running back too. Like, if whatever.
Yeah. That's what I like. Like someone was in my DMs asking a couple of trade things, and they're like, they even asked if they should drop Dowdle. I'm like, you might as well hold him at this point to see if he is a thing. And then they're like talking about trading. I'm like, again, unless you're getting something worthwhile, you might as well just hold on to him. I would never go out and trade for Rico Dowdle.
Right.
But if he's on your roster for some reason, you might as well just hold him at this point. But I'm not trying for anything in this backfield at all. If something happens, you know, like if he does become a thing, maybe I try and trade. Like, I'll pay the wait and see tax is kind of what, I guess, what I'm getting at. Like, if he does start playing like we wanted Tony Pollard to be, cool. And I need a running back at the time, maybe I'll try. But like, I'm not gonna bet on it unless I can get him for like a third, which I doubt anyone will do at this point, because who cares about thirds at all. And then his pet peeve was a rejected trade offer followed by an LOL message and nothing else. I've never commented LOL, but my favorite is to comment just what, WUT, whenever someone says me something that's really bad. Just what? That's my favorite.
I just reject. I don't.
Yeah, most of like 99% of the times I just reject. But sometimes where it's like, what? Like, because like I said, I send plenty of bad offers, and they're usually bad because I wasn't paying super attention. But like, there's certain people that I know don't play the way I do, and I'll just like, okay. So last question. At Our Real People. Oh, I wonder if Jason's still in the chat. I'm interested in the dichotomy. I read the word dichotomy correctly without even thinking about it. That was pretty good. Between being in fantasy football to win and having fun. Oh, nice. This was my thing, just having fun. How do you see them tied together and your views on why you play? I know a lot of people like winning, but I personally like the game and running my team and making decisions I think makes sense. But sometimes the hate I get from other players makes it hard to keep playing the game. I'm going to take this first because I already started on this. This is literally just fun for me. All the Trade Addicts leagues are $42, except for TA1, because I started that earlier before I realized you can do charity with fantasy football, which if I just found Scott like 20 minutes earlier, and you know, it would have been 42. But first of all, 42, the ultimate answer to life, the universe, and everything. And also because we donate almost 2.5 buy-ins to charity for all of the leagues, which means they're really like $30 leagues when it comes down to what money you're playing for, though the winner does get to choose what charity the money goes to. And to me, that absolutely matters. Like, I love when you get to the championship week and they split the pot and literally, like, they literally say, like, we're playing to see who gets to pick the charity. And that, like, warms my heart, like, to no end. I get it. People play this for money. You know, there's the people that play the portfolio style, or they're in a ton of leagues, and cool if that's what you like to do. But like, when I'm trying to get people for Trade Addicts leagues, I literally tell them these leagues are for fun. And if your answer to that, well, winning is fun, then this league isn't for you. That's not the point of this. Like, to me, this is a game. This is fun. That's what I'm here for. But I also understand that's not what everyone is here for. So that's why, besides of my low self-esteem issues, why I always qualify a lot, like the way I play and the leagues I'm in and stuff like that. Because if you play in high stakes leagues, you can't listen to my advice 90% of the time, because it's usually based on fun. And if you want to keep making moves, like, I couldn't be in a high stakes league because I would get too nervous. Like, I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, it wouldn't be fun, and I would overthink everything I do. So that's really, and another of the many, many things I've always, if I answer a question, there's a chance I got it from Zach. He was the first person to say this to me, like, what are you looking for in a league? And the answer is the people. Like, what are you looking for in a new league? The people in it. And of course, my answer used to be Superflex, tight end premium, and then it just turned into another people. You need to surround yourself with similar thinking people. And I know that's not easy, as easy for everyone as it is for me, because I have this show, I have this platform, the ability to find people pretty easily. But like, in the days of social media that we're in right now, curating the leagues you get yourself into shouldn't be super difficult, which is how you avoid this kind of situation where that is shitty. Like, if I'm sitting there having fun and then someone flips out over a trade I made, like, legitimately is like raging and it's like being mean in the chat, like, I don't want that. I don't want to be part of that. Like, so like that's really how you face the dichotomy, is you make it not one. You take yourself out of half of it and just put yourself in the situation to only be having fun. And that might not necessarily be the right answer for you, but like, that's all I can say, because that's really what it is for me. Is the answer for me, like, this is for fun. This is not for money. I do love the fact that I usually win enough to cover my costs, at least. Though I do love my one year where I bragged to my wife that I profited on fantasy football. She's like, how much money did you make? I'm like, $16. But I won. But again, like, yes, money's involved and it's cool to win. And I do love the fact that I can win enough to cover my costs and everything, because it would suck to have to pay real money. But in the end, if I won zero leagues, I wouldn't really be that hurt, because I still had fun the entire year.
And I, for me, that has shifted so much, because when I started doing, when I started playing fantasy football, and it was, you know, in a home league with Kyle, and like, that was fun. And then when we started doing the show, you kind of felt like you needed to win. You had to prove that you were good. And so I got in more leagues than I probably should have, and went, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years where you're getting that payout Christmas week. And the job that I'm working, our shipyard shuts down the week of that holiday week. And so you don't get a paycheck. And so like 5 or 6 years, I was like, look, I'm making my paycheck or more than my paycheck with fantasy football. And then I realized that, like, that was great. It was fun. It was nice that I could do that, but it's more fun for me to be in leagues and have that charity component and be in chats with people that I enjoy. And so it, you know, I kind of flipped 180 degrees on that. And so I think it's a personal choice where, like, if winning means that much to you, get in leagues where that's what your goal is.
Yeah.
And that's not wrong, but it's also not wrong to be in a league and enjoy it and just have fun with the people that are there. And like, I am in leagues now where we check up on each other.
Yeah.
We see how, you know, how everyone is doing. We talk about how, you know, what our kids are doing. I can post, you know, videos of my son playing baseball, and I can ask Russ about, you know, his vacation, and I can ask J. Mike about his daughter's graduation or, you know, their concert, or I can, you know, all of these different people. And that to me is what it's about. And I think it's the same thing. And you mentioned this earlier a little bit with the negative Twitter interactions. I don't have that.
Yeah.
But it's also the way I cultivate my timeline, the people that I surround myself, the people who follow me, because the content that I'm putting out is not gonna, like, that's not the cutthroat content that the people who are really spun up about this are consuming. You know, it's a little slower, maybe a little thoughtful, of definitely out there. You know, I'm not approaching the game from the middle. You know, I'm out on the outside edges where the psychology is. And so I think find the league that fits for you. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like if you're getting that pushback, if you're getting hate and it's not fun, then find a league that is.
Yeah, I've legitimately left leagues that I had good teams in. Like, yeah. I won back-to-back championships and left the league because it just got toxic. Like, I didn't like the people in the league. Like, I have left money on the table because I just didn't, it wasn't fun anymore. Or you take my real route and name yourself something stupid like Outhouse, and people feel too stupid to argue with someone named Outhouse, which I really think is part of the reason no one ever bothers arguing with me. First of all, because, like, again, I don't really tell the story very often, but I literally created this name as a joke that I was full of shit. Like, that's why it was Outhouse. That's why, like, that name was created. So, like, arguing with that is just, like, a little silly in general. But, you know, to just tie a bow on all of it again, just, it, if you don't like being there, it doesn't matter what else is going on. You leave. It's a game. It's silly. And, like, I get it. People are competitive, and I know that's not Zach and I. Like, we are not me. We are not, like competitive people in general. So, like, it doesn't really we don't comprehend that attitude in people. But, like, people are like that. People do just get worked up over this stuff. And it's just like, all right, cool. I don't really want to be around that.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun. It got a little serious at times, but we had a good time.
Those were some really good listener questions,
right? Like, it's like, I love that I can be so dumb, and then, like, I have the help of the people that listen to me be dumb bring intelligence to the show. Like, I don't even need to, because they're here for me, and I appreciate all of you for that. So thank you. And then I have this beautiful bastard right next to me. But also one more thing to feed off of, by the way, that I wanted to say that I forgot. Like, while Zach and I didn't meet because of a league, like, we started talking because of the whole content stuff before, you know, being in a league together. Like, my friends/family at this point, like, it's funny. Like I said, I don't remember. I think it might have been on the Grind at one point where I said, like, I would call Zach my best friend, but he's my brother. Like, we're family. Like my football friends are my better friends than the people I met in here. Like, I met Shane Manila through leagues. He slept at my house. Like, he's met and played with my children, you know, like people, like these are the people that I choose to surround myself with. And unfortunately, they're states away, you know, most of the time, but like, that doesn't mean they're not part of your everyday life. Like, I talk to Zach more than I talk to, well, I was about to say my next door neighbor, but I don't even know his name. I've never actually met my, we both have kids that get on the same bus. So we're just like, I don't talk to my neighbor, but like, you know, my better friends that live around me, I don't really talk to all that much. Like, but like the friends I've made through fantasy football, like I said, are some of them are straight up family at this point. And don't think that's weird to like embrace that, like make that what you want, and that you'll find yourself not being surrounded by shitty people anymore. Okay, that's what I had to say. But now to tie a bow on this show, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. You can hang out with us while we record. Garrett jumping in at the end. Garrett, one of our new fellows over here. But of course, we always have Frank, who is our newsman, who actually, usually he just copies and pastes, like I copy and paste what he gives me for the news, and he'll put his stuff in there. And he in conversationally told me that like one and done thing with Diggs, and I completely forgot because he did not give it to me in a copy and paste fashion, which normally I would have read it, but he did say it in the chat anyway. But yeah, so patreon.com/tradeaddictspod, hang out with us while we record on Tuesdays. We have our awesome Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. And otherwise, grand old time. But also, and like Zach brought up before, like again, I steal his answers for everything, fantasycares.org. Scott Fishbowl invites are going out right now, but that you don't have to have one of those to donate, please. Zach's wearing one of the awesome, awesome t-shirts, which I can say by the time this releases, the shop will be open. Because I am not going to release this before Wednesday afternoon, and surprise, that's when we're opening the shop. So like the two people who are watching, don't tell anybody. But yeah, so we're gonna go live tomorrow to do that. So also, again, you don't need to be in SFB to rock some of the amazing designs that Bob, Jordan, and Steven have put together. Like, it's just, they're so, so good. And plus, every penny goes to Fantasy Cares. It goes to charity. You know, we get to do our Toys for Tots shopping at the end of the year, and we've just been, any chance we can, we've been throwing donations everywhere we can, because we should do some good with the silly game we have. So fantasycares.org, donate if you can. And if you can't, just spread the word. You know, that's all we can ask, is help in any way you possibly can. And on that note, I'm out of things to say, and I'm falling asleep in my chair. So good night, everybody.
Good night, Russ.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy Pants.
That is the best.
See ya.